From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on December 23rd, 1974, 50 years ago last Monday. President Gerald Ford was just 4 months into his presidency, having assumed the office after the resignation of Richard Nixon that August. The New York Times reported that day that Ford promised not to use the CIA for illegal domestic purposes. The state of New Jersey was investigating long-standing abuse and neglect of patients in one of its largest psychiatric centers. And the Buffalo Bills were in the playoffs for a little. They had just crashed out of the playoffs, blown out by the Pittsburgh Steelers. And in Rochester, WXXI FM 91.5 hit the airwaves. Okay, that last headline was not in the New York Times. The rest were, as far as I can tell. But it was a landmark cultural event in our region nonetheless. 91.5 carried a mix of local programming, music, some NPR offerings, and it was the first public media radio station in our city. Maybe you remember over the years Mordecai in your motorcar, or waking up each morning to Simon Ponton and the Birds. But none of that was inevitable. The story of 50 years began with all kinds of uncertainty and experimentation, even including the Great Warhorse Orgy, one of WXXI's first fundraising drives, highlighted among many other fine pieces of information by my colleague Ruth Finney. It was centered around, by the way, that was centered around 18 straight hours of War Horses, those classical pieces that have become so well known. And WXXI Classical 91.5 is now one of the cultural cornerstones of our region, thanks to all of these years of hard work, yes, but adaptation and a true labor of love. My colleagues bring the music of a great spectrum of artists to you, along with their stories. Years ago, I was concerned that classical music was in jeopardy. But it's too much a part of our world, too much a foundation, and I think we need it more than ever. After all, the times change, but the stories remain the same. Today we hear some fretting that Chapel Roan crossed the line. That was a little much, they say, of Chapel Roan. Is Chapel Roan pushing the envelope too much? Would you believe that Beethoven's Razumovsky string quartets were viewed as a little too rock and roll, a little too tough to play, too much a departure from the classical style? It's all the same. It's 50 years of WXXI 91.5 and a chance to look back and look forward this hour with our guest, Ruth Finney, WXXI Classical 91.5 program director. Ruth said, I can't leave. I was just going to leave for like an hour and say, I'm going to be a listener. I'll come back in 60 minutes. And you said,
just rein us in because there's so many memories.
That's right. Welcome as well to Marianne Carberry, a Saturday host that you know, Marianne, but since 1977.
I have been around. I've definitely aged myself. I'm not trying to hide anything at this point.
No. Ruth since 1982, Marianne since 1977, Brenda Tremblay since
1991,
and of course you hear Brenda, a classical morning host and producer, and Mona Segetola-Slamy since
2011, I think.
2011.
13 years.
Music director and afternoon host. So, a lot to say, and we are going to look forward because at the core of all of this, for our listeners today, I think should be a message that it's been a remarkable five decades, but the people here care very much about making sure we still reach you wherever you are and that this work goes forward in new ways. I mean, Marianne, you said this morning, you sent a note saying, really, these conversations were happening almost 50 years ago, right?
Definitely. I mean, what when you tuned in 50 years ago, what you heard was very different. You heard everything from children's programs to marimbas to very obscure public affairs programming, but at the core were people trying to bring you outstanding programming and to serve you where you were. And we're asking, who are you? What do you want? How do we serve you? And we're still doing that now.
Ruth Finney, those early days, it is fun to read about because Classical 91.5 didn't become that until a little bit after, when there was an AM and when other things were sort of in place. It was, I mean, I don't know if it was the Wild West. It kind of was the Wild West, wasn't it?
That's kind of how I describe it. It really was because public media was, at that time it was public broadcasting, public radio, was so new and there were no rules. So whether it was classical music or folk music or jazz, it was all there. And here in Rochester, there were tons of different things. I mean, we had book reviews and movie reviews and there were about 15 different commentators that appeared on Simon's Sunshine Show, reviewing everything from, the explanation of word origins and early music, 78s, all kinds of things were on the air. Prairie Home Companion, a children's program, Sounds Like Fun with Mitzi Collins. And it just has evolved, you know. And like you say, when AM 1370 went on the air in 1984, there were many people. I was here as the radio secretary at that time, who said to Bill Pierce, who was the president at the time, "Oh, there's no way you can have two full-time stations in public radio. It'll never happen. You'll just divide your supporters. You'll divide everything," and that is not what happened. In fact, we grew our membership, and the membership virtually doubled because now people had a choice: classical music full-time and news full-time. And when you got tired of one, you flipped to the other, and we're all part of the same family. But it was wonderful for Rochesterians to have a choice.
Well, what do you remember most, Marion, about those earliest days here? I love this idea that, you know, as Ruth describes it, as a bit of a Wild West, a lot of experimentation. What was some of your first memories?
Well, for me, it was that we worked 24/7. and when we worked Monday through Friday, 9-10 hours a day, then they would say, "We're doing these concerts in the park, and we're recording these outstanding artists from all over. It's a TV show, but guess what? Radio, you're gonna lug the cameras, you're gonna set up everything. You're working Saturday and Sunday." So it was all hands on deck all the time, but the camaraderie was extraordinary, that we all were just in this kind of thing together and doing this together. And so there was burnout, but there was this thrilling sense that we were doing something really important.
Well, and, you know, I want to say that people like Brenda and Mona have been so kind and patient with me. I've been hosting this program for 11 years now. Not just one time have I said, "Should we do a show about, like, should I be worried about classical music? I read another article that said classical's in trouble." And they're like, "Yeah, there are lots of articles about how classical's in trouble."
It's its oldest, finest tradition.
Or the humanities is in trouble. I mean, like, all this stuff is happening. Why are you so patient with that? Why are you so confident in the future?
Well, first of all music is classical music, right? And I'm stealing this from Alex Ross at The New Yorker. The argument is that all music is being filtered by time, and that 100 years from now, joy wave may be considered classical music.
So interesting.
You know, so we listened to John Dowland. He was basically a pop star from the Shakespearean era, and now he's considered classical music. So we're just keeping the flame alive, Marianne, you know, since 1970 and 72, 74, 77. Right. Yep. And so I don't know, I guess there's such a range of human expression. It speaks to so many people. And, you know, there is a huge fan base, especially here in Rochester. We're very fortunate. And fortunate, too, that Ruth and Marianne and those who came before her set this tone of creativity. WXXI Classical has been fostering creativity and playfulness and fun. And in a lot of ways, Connection came out of that first broadcast in 1974.
I love the idea, by the way, that all music is classical music.
It's true.
It's just, what era is it in? And thanks to the kind of programming that I've heard on XXI over the years, again, not to go back to the war horses of the Beethovens, but it's not just the fifth and the ninth that we hear. Mm-hmm. You bring us the string quartets and the sonatas and all the beautiful things that people like me who are not deeply in that world not only love, but I love hearing that, you know, at the time, this was pretty edgy. This may sound a certain way to you now. Imagine it's 1804, and imagine that they are not used to hearing it this way. I love that context. I love what I have learned over the years, and I love the idea that in the future they're going to be like, "Joy wave." You know, stodgy old joy wave.
I'm not saying that will be the case, but
no, Daniel Armbruster's got to be listening, and I want him to call and say, "You are classical music." I love this idea. Mona, how do you feel about sort of the present and the future of classical?
Well, certainly, you know, I live it every day and I love what we do. And I came to this place knowing there's a great history. This is part of why I am excited to dig into a lot of the old stories. But I will say, when I first came here 13 years ago, I was excited, but I was also a little scared. I'm not a grand old man of broadcasting. I knew there was a great legacy that I was excited about, that was creative, that's exciting to try and figure out. You know, now in the world of broadcasting, or even as you get to podcasting, narrowcasting, everything is so niche, so you have to be very finely tuned. You're a nonprofit. You can be scared to take risks, right? You know, and you need to do everything well at first, but then to be a bit weird and to have space to play is both something I want to keep from the past. But I guess, as I said, knowing that, I would say to people, you know, that there are people like, "Oh, I loved this about Mordecai, about Simon," and I want to love and respect that. But when I was first here, I was a little scared because I'm not them. I'm myself. And so how to keep this thing people love of the past while, and some of that spirit, while also continuing to be ourselves and bring each of our own personalities and styles and approach. And certainly I have an expansive view of classical music, love the discovery, all of that. So, but I am excited for this because I know there are a lot of amazing characters, a lot of things. And I do think even a sort of modern professionalized world that we have a lot of still that bit of weird human spirit in our station.
Well, I want to just say as a listener, I think you have all done a remarkable job of keeping the history and the traditions while also being the voice that is your own that people love. You know, my next door neighbors love Brenda Tremblay. And I mean, I love Brenda Tremblay. I'm just saying, like, I mean, I literally hear from them all. Like, it's almost like it's a little too much. It's like, I get it. It's Brenda.
Well, I will have to say that, I mean, I had a moment too when I first started in the morning because I came on the heels of someone with a very long tenure in radio, and that was Simon Ponton, who had this really cool mid-Atlantic accent. He had grown up in the UK, came over here when he was a teenager. He was just cool and zany and weird and smart. And everything he did was just kind of cool. And I am the least cool person. I know.
I think
and
you're
I
cool.
Remember, I'm not cool. You were wrong. And I remember driving in like the day I came to, you know, do his show full time for the first time and having this moment, like, what can I do? And I went to Beth Adams, actually. I said, I'm panicked. What am I doing here? She's like, all you can do is come and be you. You know, just be you. Forget you're on the radio. Be you. Don't forget you're on the radio. But, you know, be your authentic self. And I feel very fortunate. But, yeah, I mean, that spirit of creativity came from Simon. It came from Carl Pultz and so many people that worked before him. And what you were saying about the grand old men of radio, right? If you think about radio in the 50s and 60s, they were all men with very deep voices. And every sentence ended on a punctuation mark. You know, it was WXXI. And somehow we broke that code in the 1970s from the get-go. We started to sound like human beings and like normal people talking on the radio. And I think we're really fortunate in Rochester because there are some classical stations and some radio stations around the country that still have those holdovers, people that sound very stentorian, especially when they talk about music.
I'd say it's funny to have been afraid of that coming here with all three full-time hosts as women and all of this, but and also the great variety of voices and styles that we bring. So,
go ahead, Ruth. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say one of the things that we have prioritized through the years is local hosts choosing their own local music so that you could be not know whether it was day or night, but you could hear a piece of music and go, yep, that was Dave Glorum's show, or that was Alan Bunin, that was Simon Ponton, because every person had their own and everyone brought their own concepts to the music. You can tell when it's Brenda's or Mona's program or Steve's or Mary Ann's. And having that local host, that local programming, as opposed to letting a computer just generate a programming list of music, all of the research says it's about the people. It's about the personalities and the presentation.
Even still.
Yes, absolutely. And it's the things that we have helped our listeners to learn and understand through 50 years, the way our ears have changed through the years. You know, at one time when I first came and I was the radio secretary, Philip Glass's Koyana Skotsi came on the air and I took probably dozens of calls saying, do you know that your record is skipping? Because it was that minimalist, repetitive sort of thing. And today we have folks when we play a piece of Philip Glass who go, who was that by? I love it. And our ears have changed because we've been exposed. And that's when one of the things that WXXI Classical has done has just been to be able to, you know, take the opportunities to broaden our playlist, to introduce people to different composers and different ethnicities and all the different sounds, broadening that definition of classical music. When we first started to play some different things, we'd have people call and say, that's not classical music. Well, no, it may not be within the period of classical music, but as Brenda said, all music, in a way, is classical music, and we've broadened that definition, and that's so important for our listeners to understand.
Well, I think before we bring in a guest on the phone, I do want to play one clip, because I think We've got a little Simon Ponton.
Oh, we do. Okay, so the other wonderful thing about, I think, the beginning days of the station is we didn't take ourselves that seriously. I could tell you stories about Simon, for example, who broadcast from a garbage truck.
Garbage Day in the Wedge.
He used to announce every week that it was Garbage Day in the Wedge. And if you're a longtime listener of Classical 91.5, you probably have really fond memories of some of the crazy shenanigans. But anyway, just to get an idea of his history and his sensibility, here's Simon talking about his very diffident musical education in the 1940s and 50s in the UK. He was born in 1940.
Well, I went to King's School, which is a public school, a very classy school, which I squeezed into on a scholarship. No idea how I did that. One of the first things they did was offer you a lot of extra courses that you could take, sort of hobby things. And I took woodworking, the ones I remember were woodworking and violin. After the lesson was through, I would take the violin, put it in my locker, and leave it there until the following week when I went back. And I did that for 3 years. And the only thing I remember of the whole procedure is that at the end we had a recital, and there were all these little tiny kids that sort of came up to my waist playing, you know, Bach sonatas and things like that. And all I could play was God Save the Queen and Men of Harlech.
He's a great example, by the way, that there's just a, you know, Americans are just really intoxicated by that beautiful accent. I mean, like, he could probably just read a dictionary, but he could do a lot more than that. No, that's a great clip. So that's Simon Ponton. We've got other clips to share. I got to bring in a guest on the phone. Marion Carberry, when did you first meet Dave Dial?
I first met Dave Dial in 1976. I was a volunteer in the news part of WXXI-FM, which had this, as we said, this potpourri of stuff that it did. He was the station manager, and then he hired me in 1977, but he had been there before I came, obviously, and I believe that he's joining us.
Yeah, station manager in 1974. Hello, Dave Dial.
Hello.
I mean, 50 years. What's your first recollection when you think back to those days, Dave?
Well, you know, I remember you've been talking about Simon Ponton. When I got to Rochester, we did not, WXXI FM did not start as a classical music station. Perhaps 9 months after we went on the air, we changed to a classical format and had switched formats with a commercial station that Simon had been working for, and he was out of work. I needed someone to host, and I kept calling Simon, leaving messages. Nobody answered. He didn't call me back. So finally, one day, I found out where he lived. I drove over to his apartment or house. I don't really remember, but I banged on the door, and finally, after about a minute, he came to the door in his bathrobe. He was still asleep, and I said, "Hey, so I had to introduce myself." He had no idea who I was. But we went from there. He was really a wonderful man with a very clever sense of humor who made classical music a joy to listen to. And I very much enjoyed working with Simon.
Well, Dave, we don't want to take too much of your time. I do want to ask you a little bit about how you see the evolution of media and, you know, maybe the challenge, but also the what I hope is invigorating fun of for us at WXXI of continuing to do this kind of work. But it was different back in the day. I mean, you could do Garbage Day in the Wedge. You could do all kinds of things. There wasn't a whole lot of competing ideas out there. If you could get yourself on people's radar, you know, there was a small list of choices. It's tougher these days, isn't it?
Yeah, well, in 1974, public radio was really just emerging, and you know, there was no roadmap to go by, so it was a little bit like throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what stuck. And our the general manager then, Bill Pierce, was a very generous man. He really allowed us to do anything we wanted to do. He never said no to me when I worked for him, and it gave me really not only an understanding, but a desire to explore as much as I could, and to allow the station and the staff to allow as much as it could. You know, we started and we had classical music, but we began a news staff as well. And news became a very important function of what we did with some of the journalists, Kathy Lewis, who worked there for a number of years and went on to CBS Sunday morning program, Marty Buxbaum. So there were a number of very, very talented individuals that went in to news. And I think all you can see all of those things that are permeating the public radio system today. And many of them were started in places like Rochester, WXXIFM. I'm proud of the work that the staff and I did.
I want to read a note from a listener, Dave, before I let you go here. This is from Paulette in London, a former staffer.
Says, when I know Paulette.
I bet you do. She says, I started working at XXIFM after college in 1975. Tom Tuber was the morning anchor. The format was various community radio. Any organization could come in and play relevant music or interview relevant people. I remember a jazz show in the evening, folk music with Mitzi Collins, and I hosted a women's program. My name at the time was Paulette Pica. Very soon after, when the local classical music station closed down, we became a classical station, kind of overnight. Dave Dial was the program director. Brad Spear was his deputy. Lots of community groups were outraged, but bringing in Simon Ponton to do his morning show seemed to go a long way to appease the local community radio community. David Anstead was the engineer in charge with Steve Galasso. I did a late-night classical show, 11 to 2. My wonderful colleagues included John Gaines, Larry Richardson, Marianne Carberry. I went on to work at National Public Radio in Washington, D.C., but WXXI-FM gave me my start, taught me everything about radio, and gave me the most cherished friends. Happy 50th anniversary, WXXI-FM. My, how time flies. That bring up any memories for you, Dave?
Oh, I can still see young Paulette Pica, and was delighted when she moved to National Public Radio. It was what she wanted, and she thrived. She did well. But there were so many people. You know, you talked about Mordecai Lipschutz. Mordecai and the stentorian voice. Mordecai had had that stentorian voice, and he kept calling me, and I wouldn't hire him. He just didn't fit what I thought about public radio and classical music, and he worked on me for probably a year and a half. And finally, I said, okay, Mordecai, I'll give you a chance part-time. And boy, he really did a great job and figured it out. And I'm proud of him. So those are the kinds of things we were able to do.
Dave, the impact is hard to measure because I will say I think a lot about the importance of this microphone and this opportunity. I think a lot about what it means to work at a place like this and what it means to a region and a community. I don't know if any of you had time to think about that back in the day. You were just trying to get stuff on the air and figure it out as you went. But what you did was you laid the foundation for everybody here today. And I just want to thank you for taking time to share some of your recollections, Dave.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's been a real pleasure working at WXXI and reminiscing about a part of my life that I don't think about very often. It's been a long time.
That's Dave Dial. Thank you, Dave.
Bye, Dave.
WXXI FM station manager in 1974. Thank you to Marianne Carberry for helping facilitate that conversation. I've got to start reading more feedback here. We're just going to be here all day. Should we just extend the hours? Ruth, how long can we be here?
I told Randy Gorbman that we could be on for 4 hours. He said, no problem.
I think we may have to. All things considered is now just WXXI reminisces. No, I mean, those are great stories. And honestly, Marianne, I mean, I do think about Mission all the time. Did you even have time to think back then about, I guess you said you did. I mean, at the center of it, you still thought, what does this community need the most? How do we get it to them?
I mean, it wasn't really when I was the traffic secretary, I wasn't really thinking about that, but I know Dave Dial was. But then I became operations director, and then I became program manager, and it was in a very quick amount of time, like in 2 years, I went from traffic secretary to program. And then suddenly, yeah, you had to think long term, because the Board of Trustees expected that. They were giving you money, and you had to use that money wisely. And as Dave said, you know, the spaghetti would only stick so long. So you had to really figure out why were you doing what you were doing. And so it was, but there was no roadmap at all. That was the thing. It wasn't like commercial radio, which everybody knew what commercial radio was, but nobody knew what we were doing, including us, to some extent.
Mark writes to say, Evan, I do love WXXI Classical. There were alternative shows they broadcast, which made me love it even more. Thistle and Shamrock, Music of the 21st Century, and a Broadway show, the name escapes me, which aired on Saturdays at noon.
Stage Notes.
Stage Notes. Yes. And Mark goes on to say, classical music stations can be stuffy, but WXXI Classical is not one of them. They're fun and diverse with new shows, sometimes about movie scores or video game music. Keep it up. That's from Mark. Do you love that, Mona?
I do.
What
I like
a great
hearing
endorsement,
that.
Isn't that?
It's definitely hearing the old stories, which I love. I also, while I can say I want to find my own space, I also sometimes am jealous of there not being a roadmap. It was probably scary, but am I already coming into a system that's already fixed?
Yeah.
But I'm not, and I think we aren't. Is it may not be as wild, but there's still a few spaces in that frontier. And that is where I hope, while we do think about service and very seriously about all of this, that sense of fun, which I think Brenda sometimes has to remind me, remember, it just shows you're human. Like, I don't want to show I'm human. I want to show I'm a professional. But there is space.
Professionals are not human.
Humans, yes. But that sense of both, you know, having an important mission, but also the fun being part of it, the exploration that, yeah, video game music, incorporating Broadway, incorporating, of course, new voices in a very serious mission-based way. But also, again, if we're not enjoying it, if we're not sharing some joy, what are we losing with that? So, you know, I love that sense. It's, again, not as wild of a West, but still hope to explore, and there's a lot to see. So I still love hearing all the old stories because some of these voices are, I grew up in New Jersey listening to With Heart and Voice with Richard Gladwell. So, you know, like years before I came here or thought about working at the station. So there's still history I have a connection to that I didn't know as a person. So
you want to add to that?
And I think it's important that we don't pigeonhole our listeners and say, oh, yes, all opera listeners are like this, or all the people who like video game music are like this. I remember years ago, we brought in a professional who did a research group. And we were sitting, some of us from the station, were sitting behind glass watching these folks talking about the music. And we heard this man talking about how passionate he was about opera. And we're all like looking, trying to see in the camera, who is the guy talking about opera? And when we finally got a look at him, he was the guy that was in leather and chains and tattoos, and he was a biker. And we were all like, okay, this is not your typical opera listener, you know? And so we can't pigeonhole. And some of our most avid video game music folks that love the video game music are folks that are older and love video game music. So we have to think about the fact that there's this broad spectrum in our audience, and some will love things and some will not. I had a woman who used to call and say, I hate flute music. Stop playing flute music. Well, we can't stop playing flute music, you know? There's all kinds of voices, all kinds of, you know, you just got to think about the audience and think about the breadth of the audience and how
not
we
not think
can,
so narrowly.
I love
that story. If you're on the phone, we're going to get to you. I promise we'll get to your phone calls one way or another. I have no idea how, but we're going to do it. I want to ask Brenda about something that I'm thinking about when it comes to what has changed but what has not changed. So, you know, we talk about how people access and why they would access 91.5, why they would access WXXI. We are in an era where people can get most of the music they want whenever they want it, often without paying for it. It's very, very different. I mean, I was listening to a biography recently, and Rossini was talking about having attended a performance in Vienna and just being in the audience and being thrilled that the audience demanded a movement be played again because they're not going to hear it again. I mean, we cannot relate to that. Like, this is the one chance. We love that movement. Do it again. They're doing it again. It's so different. And yet, Ruth's point, Brenda, about that human part of it, why people choose it is not just because, well, I could play this music anywhere, but because they want to feel connected. And Mona's talking about opening up and letting a little bit of that fun side out. And people want to be connected to you. And so many people who love you feel like they're not just here to listen to the music. They want to be connected to something.
Well, this is going to sound so corny, but I do believe that, you know, people want to hear a reassuring voice in, you know,
I don't think
my
it's corny
case,
at
in
all.
The morning, just it's okay to leave the house, you know, which is came up during the pandemic hit. I have such clear memories of Ruth offering leadership and saying exactly the right thing. And that happened like 3 days after the pandemic hit. And I called her. I said, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. Everything was shutting down. There was like a little hint of panic in the air. And she just said, just be normal.
Do
be
you.
Normal. Yeah. Do you. And I think, you know, a lot of people in the early days of 2020 really relied on the companionship and guidance. And classical music was the medium, but there was also that beacon of human company, you know. And for myself, too, people were lonely and isolated.
Absolutely.
And that's still the case for a lot of people. A lot of people live alone. A lot of people have lost loved ones. And it's just reassuring to hear a friendly voice, not to mention the curatorship. I mean, someone like Mona picking your music for you when you're driving home, that's a gift. It's almost overwhelming what you could listen to, right?
Yes.
It's absolutely overwhelming.
Which is why we get stuck in the same small loops unless we go to you.
Right. So I think it's a gift to the community. And one of the wonderful things about WXXI is it a mirror to the city of Rochester. It's a mirror to the community. And so there's this positive feedback loop. You know, we're looking at the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, someone like Herb Smith, you know, who comes in and performs in Rochester, collecting recordings from the Skinny Atlas Festival, the Geneva Music Festival, and shining them back into the community for people who can't necessarily get there in person. And that's happening all the time. The company, the humanity, the music, the inspiration. It's a nice thing, and it's a testament to Rochester that we've been able to keep it going.
Well, and frankly, the community is voting to keep it going because the community cares enough to support it in various ways, to listen, to support it financially. It's become a cornerstone. If you're just joining us, we're talking about 50 years for WXXI FM 91.5. It wasn't always just classical. Just classical. Wasn't always classical, 91.5. It was sort of everything back in the day, those early days. And I want to bring in a couple of phone calls because we're going to lose the hour if I'm not careful. And I got to get as many voices as we can here. So here we go. Giancarlo's been waiting. Hello, Giancarlo.
Hi. I'm Giancarlo Cervone. I was a part-time staffer
in Giancarlo.
The early 80s. Hi, Marianne and Ruth. And I've had the privilege of meeting both Mona and Brenda as well. But, Marianne is the one who showed me the ropes. And I used to do the weekend overnights. I was the last jazz DJ on FM before mm-hmm. that went over to AM. Mm-hmm. And then I did the request program Midnight Till Dawn, mm-hmm. Sunday morning. Richard Gladwell would come in and take over from me. And I remember Ruth had Reach Out Radio, which I don't know if you all had mentioned that yet. But I guess what I wanted to say, you know, at the time, I had no idea. I didn't really have that sense that this thing had only been going on for 5 or 6 years. And now when I look back and hear you talking about 50 years, that was a while ago. I guess the thing I wanted to say, I came to the station fresh out of college. I had worked at college radio, and the whole thing was just super exciting. I remember working on some of the pledge drives and how excited it would be to, you know, meet a goal or something like that and help keep this thing going. when there were elections, we'd go to campaign headquarters and do remotes from there. I remember engineering for, and I can't remember his name now, which is terrible, but we'd do reporting right from there because, you know, this was before the internet, and it was very, very different. This, you know, the stuff that the station did was a way of keeping people in touch with what was going on. Mm-hmm. That was even more significant than any other time without the, you know, all the online stuff that we have now. But I don't want to take a lot of time. I just want to, you know, wish the happy anniversary and thank everybody there for the help that you gave me and for letting me be a little part of it for a while there.
Cheers, Giancarlo. Thank you. Thanks for the work that you did here. That's a familiar voice. Still familiar?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah.
As soon as he said Giancarlo, I knew exactly who it was.
You remember everybody somehow.
Only when the brain cells are working.
I know Giancarlo is a musician who plays at the little cafe. I didn't realize we shared the station in common.
Oh, there.
That's so amazing.
Look at that, see?
And you're still out doing remotes on election night with Election Night Pizza.
I was going to say, Giancarlo's, the team back then, that was very new. Going out and doing these remotes on election night, we absolutely still are. May we always do that.
I remember literally roller skating in the basement of the War Memorial to get the reports and bring them back to get the figures and bring them back. Roller skating. Literally.
Roller skating.
Yeah.
You can still do that. Well,
no, thanks.
No? The roller skating days are done. Let me get John and go ahead, John Gaines in Massachusetts. Hello, John.
Hi, John.
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
I can. Go ahead, sir.
Great. Hello to Evan and hello to Brenda and Mona and Marianne. And congratulations on 50 years. It's really something.
Well, thank you. Do you have any fond memories here?
Only fond memories.
I hope they're only fond.
Only fond memories.
Do you have any unfond memories? Share those.
No.
Well, there are some memories I better not share because, you know, I want you to keep your FCC license. Those first couple of years, I came on board a few months before the station signed on for the first time. That was in the summer of 1974. And your earlier guest, Dave Dial, took a chance and hired me. I was the youngest person on the staff. And he pretty much, over those 2 years, let me try everything I suggested. Anything I wanted to try, he said, go ahead. Which is funny because he talked about Bill Pierce letting him try whatever he wanted to do, and that's just what Dave Dial did, too. So I got a chance to try a little bit of everything, including submitting things to NPR's All Things Considered program and creating and producing some jazz festivals outdoor in the parks. I even had a short gig on the morning show preceding Simon Ponton. Tom Tuber had started the morning program, and when he left, I took over for a while, and then mercifully, they hired Simon. And so I got a chance to try just about everything at WXXI, and I'm so grateful for my time there.
Oh, John, thank you very much. Another voice there.
Absolutely.
Marianne.
John was so talented and so technically capable and has offered some wonderful descriptions. My favorite one, John, that you sent to me was that we were like a wonderful sitcom. We were a cast, a sitcom cast, and we really were. Each one of us played a role, and we were characters.
Well, so John describing Dave and Dave describing Bill Pierce as really cultivating a culture that said, we're not going to do everything perfect. We are going to try a lot of stuff here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have always thought the best leaders, the best coaches, the best managers have celebrated failure because they say that usually means we tried something new and it usually means we've learned something valuable, even if it didn't work, as opposed to being so careful.
Right.
That, you know, so what a great culture. I mean, and it certainly feels like that today. I'm not just saying that now. I mean, it's always felt since the day I walked in the door here. you know, respect the place, respect the audience, but try new things. And so that's great stuff. Are you contesting that?
No, I'm just thinking about the fact there was an April Fool's Day that Simon Ponton decided he was going to do a remote broadcast from Cobbs Hill Reservoir. And he had pre-produced all of these sound effects of people jogging and water and the whole thing. And literally Bill Pierce went up to Cobbs Hill, walked all around the reservoir trying to find Simon, and he was actually just here in the studio. Simon was sure he was going to get fired by that one, but it never happened because we had a good time and we tried everything. Simon is probably listening right now, just saying he was open to tune
in. And the other one he did was there was an assistant general manager, Greg Hunt. Greg Hunt knew. He's the only one who knew. They flipped April Fool's, they flipped the stations. So AM 1370 was on the FM and FM was on the AM. And so people got up and pushed the button and they were getting classical music on the AM. And Bill Pierce was losing his ever-loving mind. And nobody knew. Nobody knew. That was the April Fool's Day for Rochester that year.
That takes some guts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Speaking of the FCC.
Yeah. Speaking of, I think we have David Glarum on the line who can join us now, who, by the way, was WXXI music director when that crossover did happen to permanence there. So 1978 to 1988, a very important time. Hello, David.
Hi. How are you all doing?
Very good. What do you remember about Dave Glarum?
A lot, since we worked together. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hi. Oh, hanging in there. How are you?
Great. And we worked together so closely. Mm-hmm. We were at a time where we were trying to fill our library as much as we could, and all I can think about was you ordering and ordering and ordering records and CDs. Am I right?
Yeah, such a tough job. So hard.
I know. Somebody had to do it. Somebody had to do it.
Yeah, I went from a nice budget to build the library at the time. And when I went on to a different station, at some point I was given $0. And boy, did I pine for those days at WXXI.
Yeah.
Salad days, sure. What besides that, Dave, what stands out to you most in terms of why your tenure here happened to be at a time that it was so successful, that it was growing, that the community was really, mm-hmm. The community was taken with what was going on? Why did it work so well?
I think that it's two things. It's the audience, the passion that the audience had for classical music, and their understanding of how important it is in one's life. It's about quality of life. We were all involved in that mission, if you will. Also, I heard someone mention earlier that the cast was like a sitcom cast. I couldn't agree more because we laughed and laughed and laughed. We needled each other. It was just constant jokes. It was like stand-up comedy from hallway to studio. And I that feeling was unique to WXXI. I worked in Orlando for 2 decades following WMFE, and it was more buttoned down, more stringent, if I can use that word. I had fun there, don't get me wrong. I was happy to work there. But there was just something about WXXI that was very, very special. I loved going to work. It was fun, even walking through the snow for 40, 45 minutes from Upton Park to State Street, not having a car. It didn't matter because I had a job that I loved.
Well,
and so I really, really appreciate that.
And I think, you know, Dave is perfectly describing the fact that we were like a family. Very much like a family. Sometimes we were great and we loved each other. Sometimes we would, you know, have conflict, just as any family does. But each person had the space to be, themselves and to bring the best of themselves to our audience. And that's what I think has been so special about WXXI Classical through the years. Hi, Dave. It's Ruth.
Oh, hi, Ruth. So good to hear your voice again.
You
too. I couldn't agree with you more about that. I remember that I was given the freedom to put together a program called Literature and Music, where I would draw connections, speaking of connections, between my love of literature. I was a high school English teacher before coming to WMFE, and classical music. Again, fun. And I was allowed to do that. And I can't think of another time where that might have been possible. So absolutely, the spirit of adventure and the freedom to fail and to learn from that, like you said, Evan, earlier, all part of WMFE. Also, the WXXI, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
2 decades.
I don't know. Sorry about that. So, yeah, I worked there from 2009 to, WXXI from 1979 to 1990. And so I was using WXXI's call letters on WMFE for a very long time.
That's fine.
And now I'm going in the other way around.
Before we let you go, Dave, you know, we have talked, and I think my colleagues here have done such a wonderful job of describing the personal connection that listeners feel. And that's why I think well into the future, XXI will be here. The work will be here because it goes beyond just pressing a button or pulling up a stream of something. But do you worry about that? Do you worry that we're a little less connected to human beings these days with all the ease of technology that you didn't have when you were there?
I think so. Yeah, I think the online services, and I do subscribe to three of them, QBuzz, Apple Music, and YouTube Music, as well as listening to WXXI. And also the station in Detroit, frankly, because Peter Worf worked there, who was a part-time announcer at WXXI for years. But I just wanted to say that the mission of public radio is terribly important to me. And being there during the relative naissance of public radio, you know, 79, 75, I guess, was when you went on the air, that we were really, really conscious of the mission of public radio. There was a book that came out called A Public Trust. I think the Carnegie Association or whatever it's called, that they produced it. Wonderful book. And it was very idealistic. And it allowed us as announcers to, like Walt Whitman, patient, noiseless spider. I just woke up. And just spinning your web out all over the place and seeing what would catch. And the listeners, I believe, respected that. And we, in turn, respect the listeners. And I want to say one final thing. I went from an all-classical station to a hybrid station in MFE. And what a difference, because in a sense, you're kind of competing with each other, which is not healthy. And ratings became incredibly important. And it just wasn't a fertile ground. And I realize now how precious it is that you have built stations that will allow for an all classical station on FM, all news station now on FM, and God knows how many other stations you have now. But in 50 years, what you have accomplished is nothing short of spectacular. So I congratulate you all.
Thank you, Dave. That's David
Glarum.
Really, the 80s built around the work of a full team, including people like Dave Glarum. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
Cheers
to you.
Thanks to all of you. I miss you.
Miss you too, Dave.
What an hour this has been. I'd be remiss if I didn't grab one more phone call. I got to take our friend and colleague, John Andrus, who is on the line. Hello, John.
Hi, greetings, salutation. It's certainly a pleasure saying hello to all of my colleagues doing a wonderful job this afternoon and hearing some of the voices I remember on Classical 91.5 as well. It is a joy to come to work. It's a joy to program music, as all of our colleagues know this. And it's also great to meet people out in public who really love what we do. And as former broadcaster Jack Balvino said, if you really love what you're doing, you're not really working that hard at all, or something like that. And it's certainly a pleasure both coming to WXXI FM and being a part of the Sunday morning team, and also filling in for Brenda, Steve, and Mona as well. And it's a pleasure working with all of you, and Marianne on the weekend too.
Well, John, thank you. And first of all, John's voice. Everybody knows John's voice. It's a wonderful voice. Thank you, John Andrus. We look forward to seeing you back in here. I want to tell you a quick John Andrus story. I'm going to put him on hold and make him. I'm going to torture him with this. I got my first day here. He's one of the first people I met. And I just remember hearing his voice going, that guy's like probably like really high up here. I say this because like John's voice, I think, is phenomenal. And what it made me realize is there are so many talented, wonderful voices. And everyone was so kind. Everyone made you feel so welcome. John was that way. John is that way. Great voice. Brenda, Mona, I mean, Julia, the list goes on. Steve now, of course. It's just such a talented group of people that have done so much for this community. And John's right. People, you know, people in the community will probably let you know all the time what that means to them. I'm glad he brought up Jack Palvino. Just this community has lost a lot of people recently, and we feel for Jack's family. But I want to look ahead a little bit here. We've got about 90 seconds left here. So tell me, what excites you? What's the future look like to
you? One of the things that really excites me is we have interns from the Eastman School of Music almost every semester. And when these young people are like literally competing to come to WXXI Classical for an internship, and the ideas and the concepts that they bring to us and help us to remember that there are composers and performers and conductors that are like young people. They're in their 20s and 30s, and they are the future of classical music. And that is so exciting. The idea that all classical music is, you know, white-haired people and that sort of thing is so wrong. I mean, there's composers that are writing about social issues today. I think about the seven last words of The Unarmed, about the black people who were killed by police officers, Joel Thompson's work, and things like that that are just part of our, you know, DNA, part of our lives. And that's music being composed today. And it's wonderful to think about how we can reflect the community and reflect what's going on in this world and help people through the things that they were dealing with on a day-to-day basis with classical music.
Hey, 30 seconds or less. Are you still excited about the future of classical?
Absolutely. And being creative. You know, when you do something for a long time, you know, you have to keep your energies and your spirit of creativity up. And so I'm kind of hoping to bring in some more joy and more creativity in 2025.
Well, and we're going to, by the way, in a minute, we're going to close with a little. Mona brought us music from Mitzi, Greensleeves. So we're going to close with that. You want to just give a little tip of your cap there to that?
Just Mitzi Collins had a show long before I was here, but I know her as a musician. I have maybe 10 of her albums in the library and love to play them. And that's, Dave was talking about buying all these recordings. We are still acquiring, but it's now my job internally to worry about digitizing all of them so the music keeps playing. So along with all we do creatively, I want to make sure we technically can keep going, but that's not an inspiring place to end. I don't know, earlier you talked about non-commercial, or was it What Radio Still Matters? There's so many things to say, non-commercial spaces that matter so much to have this, but I'll let it go because we need another 3 hours.
We do. It turns out. And people like Larry Reynolds, so many others who have emailed their thoughts, who've been listening for decades. We want to thank you for being here, for listening to Classical 91.5, for supporting WXXI, and for appreciating what this wonderful group of people. To all my colleagues, thank you. Happy 50 years.
Thank you, Evan.
Thank you, Evan.
91.5. Here's to 500 more. And from all of us at Connections, thanks for listening. We're back with you on New Year's Eve.